Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air. Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, John McCure, and in for Julia Fellow, it's Adam Roberts.
All right. Heavy Monday.
Who's back?
Yes, I'm back, and I'm almost on the right schedule. It's a 12-hour time difference, so even though we got back on Friday, I still feel like it's not quite right, but we're getting close. Much more on the trip coming up throughout the show. Coming up here right at 3:15, I'll give you some of the highlights of our incredible trip with listeners to Southeast Asia. Before we get to any of that, the things that we're tracking today.
This is the 3 at 3 on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
All right, this is a crazy story. A Milwaukee man, a 24-year-old guy, has been arrested after police say he drove 107 miles an hour down the interstate with a bunch of kids in his vehicle. He was going 107, according to state troopers. Just yesterday at 4:30 in the afternoon, they pulled him over. Inside the vehicle were five passengers, four minors, and another adult. Detectives say he appeared to be on the influence of drugs. He was given field sobriety tests, arrested, transported to a hospital for a legal blood draw. The other adult in the vehicle then was charged with obstructing an officer, got in a big old argument. No court date has yet been set for the 24-year-old man. I'm not naming him because he has not yet formally been charged, although that's going to be coming.
Number two, keep an eye on your daily health guidelines. They could be changing soon. That's if Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. does what he's been reported to be planning, which is removing dietary guidelines that have existed for 20 years on so-called saturated fats. Think butter, meat, or other foods where fat just appears naturally, but has long been a thing that people have said, hey, you got to watch how much you're consuming. Again, going back to 2005, when this dietary guideline was set to limit it to less than 10% of your daily calories. Well, it's unclear what the actual revised guidelines will be. RFK has previously argued Americans need more, not less, saturated fats, saying foods like butter, cheese, milk, and red meat have been, quote, unfairly demonized for decades. Important to note, trans fat guidelines, which are the ones you find in processed foods, think deep fried foods at the fair, those guidelines will not be changing, according to several reports.
That is an interesting change. Hey, the third thing of the 3 at 3, how about a great way to start the week tonight? The Northern Light Show, the aurora may be visible as far south as central Wisconsin tonight, while the entire state is in the light's view line for tomorrow night. The forecast has a KP index of 4 for tonight. Tomorrow's is 5. That's the way they measure how the aurora borealis shows up through the atmosphere. It's likely to be a little bit brighter tomorrow night. Now, of course, weather is always a factor. It should cooperate tonight. If they make an appearance, it's going to be mostly clear skies, especially a little further north where it's going to be seen. Tomorrow, 20% chance of showers in Milwaukee, 40% chance in Madison. And the typically best times, tonight and tomorrow night, within an hour or two of midnight. Meaning, keep an eye to the skies between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m.
I remember the last time we had a good aurora forecast. I was still on the morning shift, so I took my wife and we went to Harrington Beach in Ozaukee County to try to catch it. A lot of people had their fancy things, although you can sometimes see just by using your phone.
Yeah.
But we had a limited time window because I had to go to bed, and so we had about 10 minutes to take in the natural wonder before, hey, got to get back home.
And then a quick nap. And you're right. Your iPhone, if you look through your, or your Android, if you look through your phone, it captures it better than the naked eye. It's really quite incredible.
What a world.
It is 3:12 at WTMJ. Back from Southeast Asia. That's up next. It's weird when you think about the world we live in that 2 days ago, I was 12 time zones away, literally halfway around the world, and now we're back here. And I was with incredible 20 listeners from WTMJ. We went to Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and Thailand. Incredible experiences from riding Vespas in Vietnam to visiting Halong Bay. In Cambodia, we went to Angkor Wat. It's the big famous ruins. And I compare it a lot to Machu Picchu. It has that same mystical, magical feeling. I want to tell you about one other thing, Adam, that was really cool. Also in Cambodia, they use rats. They've trained rats to detect landmines.
They're exposed from 50, 60 years ago.
And the mines are still there. Mm-hmm. And the rats are incredible. In Thailand, we visited elephants. I want to play this for you because really at the center of our visit was monks, Buddhism, that feel throughout Southeast Asia. That is the monks chanting. We got up early one morning, really early, and we went to the temple, and they were there. And Buddhism is so fascinating because it's not a religion. I always thought it was. It's a way of life. It's a lifestyle. But if you're Buddhist, you don't worship a god. You, more than that, endorse and embrace a certain style of life, which is about happiness and being easygoing and that sort of thing. But it was a really incredible trip. You know, we take a big trip or two every single year, and a lot of times it's to Europe. And it was great to be in a place where they don't really follow U.S. politics. When you go to Italy or you go to Ireland or you're in Paris, they want to ask us all the time about what's happening with our U.S. politics, about whoever's in office, about what they think we're doing right or more often wrong. When you're in Cambodia or Laos, they don't follow our politics. They're just following their everyday life. They're kind, they're simple, and they're engaged in what they're doing and taking care of their families. It was really a relief not to just have to talk at all about our politics.
Which is so interesting because this week, a lot of the news focus is on, as we'll talk later on the show, the president touring Asia. He's
yeah.
in Japan today, going to have a huge meeting with China soon. So
yep.
the eyes of the political world, maybe now more so than any point in Trump's second administration, are on that region.
You're right. You're right. That's where the focus will be. It's a long way to get to Southeast Asia. We started in Vietnam, actually flew through Japan, and then we ended in Thailand. But it's worth the trip. If you've ever wanted to go somewhere completely different, and it's super affordable, it's very easy. We flew. We took 11 flights during this trip. It was 11 different flights.
You rack up those flyer miles pretty quick.
Yeah, for sure. But it was really relatively easy. And we were in tuk-tuks. We were in different sorts of boats. We were in all those airplanes, and it's absolutely incredible. Throughout the course of the next couple of days, I'm going to introduce you to some of the people that we met along the way, including today during the 5 o'clock hour, our tour guide in Cambodia. Absolutely fascinating, and he has very interesting things to say about the United States and about his country. We'll share that with you. And you, speaking of what happened in Japan, coming up in a little less than an hour from now, we'll dive into the president's visit to Japan and to Southeast Asia. It is 319 at WTMJ. All right, welcome back to the show. It is 322 at WTMJ. So you've probably seen the headline. The White House has torn down the East Wing. The Trump administration has removed the East Wing of the White House. They're going to put up a grand ballroom, and that's part of the footprint is where the East Wing is. So we all know the West Wing, right? That's where the Oval Office is. That's where the press secretary is. That's where the briefing room is. That's where most of the business of the country takes place is in the West Wing. The East Wing, though, has a rich history. It's very ceremonial. The First Lady's offices are there. That's really the only part of the building that she gets to take charge of. The Emergency Operations Center, which was used on 9/11. We've seen the famous pictures of Dick Cheney on the phone with Condoleezza Rice while the president was flying around. That was in the PIOC, which is in the bottom of the East Wing. So that's going to be gone. Perhaps most notable and most famous is the movie theater. The theater in the White House. Bill Clinton once famously said, Air Force One, Camp David, they have nothing on the White House theater. That is the best perk I have as president, is what he once famously said. Listen to some of this, Adam. These are some of the movies that presidents watched in this iconic theater. And it was there for a long time.
Sure.
It was renovated a couple times. Dwight Eisenhower watched High Noon in the theater there. John F. Kennedy saw From Russia with Love the day before he was assassinated.
Wow.
He sat in that theater. Richard Nixon, maybe ironically, saw The Sting. Bill Clinton gathered staff and political pals to watch the Super Bowl. Clinton also saw The Patriot twice at the White House. 5 years after the September 11th terrorist attacks, George W. Bush watched United 93. Barack Obama took it up a level. He hosted the cast and crew from Lincoln and Selma there. Donald Trump watched what he said is one of his favorite movies, Sunset Boulevard. And this number really jumps out at me. The biggest movie buff of them all, Jimmy Carter, he watched 465 movies, and he was in office for one term. That means he watched more than a movie a day. How's that possible? How is that literally
possible?
There
were some long movie marathon weekends maybe at the White House.
He and Rosalind would just knock off a Saturday with like four or five movies?
You think anyone in that friend group ever said when they were like, hey, maybe it's your turn to host movie night. Maybe they go, hey, you literally have the best movie theater in America. Don't play that with me.
Yeah. There's lots of great pictures, too. There's pictures of both the Bush families. There's pictures of Reagan sitting watching movies. I have a book at home. It's all about Ronald and Nancy Reagan. You know, he was a former movie star. The book is just about the time they spent in the theater at the White House. And it goes through every movie that they watched. They also watched hundreds of movies.
It really does speak to just how much the public does care about this white building on Pennsylvania Avenue, that something as seemingly niche as the movie theater inside the building merits a whole book discussing it.
Yeah, it really does say a lot. Other things that have been hosted in the East Wing of the White House include Jackie Kennedy famously holding court and talking about her plans to redecorate. That took place in the East Wing of the White House. George W. Bush used the East Wing to practice his State of the Union address in 2004. There's famous pictures of that. And in a blend of social and serious matters, civilian visitors passing through the East Wing could pause to write cards to service members in overseas conflicts for the years after 9/11. That's kind of where that came from. Can that number really be right about Jimmy Carter?
Jimmy, that does seem like a, did you mean to say something else? And then, no, my math tells me it's this. Because, yeah, that
465 in 1 year?
Now, I'll speak from experience. Sometimes if you get into a movie mood on a Saturday and a Sunday and you know it's going to be a rainy weekend, you're just like, hey, this is going to be our weekend. You can crank through
like
five or six of them.
But here's the deal. He also traveled as president, so there were weeks at a time where he was overseas or he was on the West Coast or he was somewhere else. So those days are taken out. And he still watched 465 movies in the White House movie theater.
We need to get a White House historian on the show to crack that number.
That's a great idea. All right, AI is everywhere. And I think we need to just endorse it, embrace it. We're going to use it here.
And I, for one, welcome our AI overlords.
That's right. Advertisers, they don't like the use of AI. At least some of them don't. This is becoming a big story. ABC's Alex Stone is with us from Los Angeles. What's this all about, Alex?
Well, it's because a consumer is kind of saying, we don't know about this. So this comes at a time when so many companies are now embracing AI and saying that they're going to use it in a number of different ways. And remember a few weeks ago, the announcement that there is an AI actress that is out there that... Yeah, they say is ready for prime time, and they're trying to get signed to a talent agency. And a lot of people are saying they don't want to see, even if she looks real, they don't want to see an AI actress in the movies that we go and watch. So there are a number of companies, including Guess Jeans, that are now using AI models, and that is creating backlash. And people who are saying, no, that is not what we want. There's an ad campaign out there for Guess that they are not real people, and those online are saying, no way.
This doesn't make me want to buy anything. We want to look at real people.
So there are now companies that are coming out saying they will not use AI in their advertising. The clothing brand Aerie saying we knew it was time for us to take a clear stance that we use real life and real people, and that's going to be the foundation of our brand. Others are saying the same thing. Tash Walker, CEO of a research company called Mix Global, she says this all makes sense, and now companies are going to capitalize on saying, no, we use real humans.
It's just a distinctive point of view, and that really draws people in, because more than anything, what most consumers really want is to feel connected and to see and listen to human stories that are reflective of their own life experiences.
So do you feel connected to AI, and what if you don't know? You know, it's no longer like it was a few years ago where the crowd had like melted off faces and people had 18 fingers and all of that. It looks real. So if you don't know, do you care? And a lot of people are saying, yeah, they still care. Dove is getting on board. They're pledging they will never use AI to create images of women. Heineken is getting into it as well. They're poking fun at a dating company that has promoted AI connections over human ones. The new Heineken ad is the best way to make a friend is over a beer, and they talk about how it's face-to-face. But Walker says, look, consumers are debating this right now. They're deciding what our line is of what's okay.
Ultimately, the point of advertising is to sell more stuff. And so if consumers speak by making it really clear that they might reject certain brands if they're using AI in a way that doesn't speak to them, then brands will listen to that.
And companies are trying to figure out where that line is. The company behind the guests, the AI ads, they're defending it. They say, hey, this is just a way to do advertising, not to replace humans.
This is meant to just supplement and to add, a new avenue of marketing.
But the consumer base said no, that they didn't want to see a perfect human being created by a computer. So it's this figuring out, but now there are companies that are coming out and saying, you know what, like Aerie and Dove and Heineken saying they will not do this and that they're going to use real humans.
I don't know, Alex. The argument that people feel connections to brand, I'm not buying that at all. I think the average American is a smart consumer, you know, whether or not it's an AI ad or not. I mean, I know I can tell when I see an AI ad now. And what I wonder is,
can you?
I believe I can. The ones that I see are pretty obvious on my social media feed, I think, to the naked eye. Now, to be fair, in the future, that could become harder. And I do wonder if companies will be singing the same tune once it is super hard, even on like regular TV ads, to tell.
Yeah, I mean, there are some. It's pretty tough to tell. And voiceovers and other things where it's pretty difficult to figure it out. And it is getting better by the day. You know, like I say, that it was only like 2 or 3 years ago that everybody had numerous fingers and things didn't look right. And that doesn't go on anymore. But, yeah, I mean, as it gets better and better, and AI models and actors, they don't need breaks. They don't complain about things that it's just for a company. It's a lot cheaper, a lot quicker. And so there's a good reason why companies are doing that. But even if they get to a point where it does look totally real, do you want to go to a movie or watch a commercial where, though, they may look like real humans, but they're not? And that's kind of where the debate is. That some people say, well, if you can't tell, then who cares? Others say no, that, you know, they want there to be a human back there, but it is up for debate.
Alex, I think you hit it. It's all about money for the companies. They're saving money. They don't have to pay benefits. They don't have to.
Oh, 100%.
All of that.
It's lot cheaper. They can make, you know, a person with any color, hair color, doing whatever whatever stunt they want them to do.
Right. So here's my question related to that, Alex. Do you want to pay more for your Honey Nut Cheerios, or do you want to deal with that it's an AI actor? I say, I don't care who's doing the ad. Let me pay less for my Honey Nut Cheerios.
Bad news. You're probably not going to pay less for anything because of this, but the companies will save money.
ABC's Alex Stone in Los Angeles. Good topic. Thanks, Alex.
You got it. Thanks, Ace.
It is 3:42 at WTMJ. Coming up, this is fascinating stuff. There's a bill out there right now that would close a loophole that right now makes it confusing for retailers on at what age they can and cannot sell cigarettes. And our young people are becoming victims because of this. And also, FEMA denies funding for Milwaukee. Alderman Peter Bergalis with us live in the studio up next. So there's a lot of confusion about at what age people are allowed to buy cigarettes and things like that, tobacco products, in our state. It's because Wisconsin's one of only 5 states that has not yet passed a state law that requires the age be listed as 21 instead of 18. It's not in alignment with federal law. That needs to change. And one of the leaders in this effort is Milwaukee Alderman Peter Bergalis, who has written a letter to the Milwaukee legislative delegation about this. And Peter's with us in the studio. Peter, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
So let's dive into this. Did I explain that right? What's happening right now? Is there confusion if you're a vendor about at what age and how it's enforced and all that stuff?
Sure. So I serve on the licensing committee in Milwaukee. And one thing we look at when we renew a gas station or a convenience store's food dealer license is if there are any police reports. And underage sale tickets is something that is listed on those licensing reports. Occasionally, we'll see something where there's a police report or a call for service, but no citation was issued. Hey, MPD, why didn't we write a ticket? Well, the person who tried to buy these cigarettes was 19. Well, why didn't we write a ticket to the clerk? Because our ordinance is still 18. Okay, well, let's fix the ordinance. We know federal law is 21. It's been like that for a number of years now. Let's fix our ordinance so that we can write citations appropriately that mirror federal law. City attorney's opinion on that from last summer was that even though state law is flawed, we can't write an ordinance that matches federal law until state law is corrected. So a bill something similar to this has been introduced in the last couple of legislatures. It never got any traction before, but now I want to get a Republican wrote this one. But I want to make sure that it doesn't matter if it's a Republican or a Democratic bill, if it's something that keeps our community safer and gives municipalities the tools and resources we need to do our jobs better, that the entire Milwaukee delegation get on board and support it, regardless of who wrote it.
You know, Peter, I'm glad you mentioned you're on the licensing committee, because I was going to ask, related to all this, when we and you guys on the committee consider new applications for a business that wants to sell tobacco products, or maybe think of like hemp-derived CBD like we've seen pop up in the city over the last few years, how much weight does all of this uncertainty over the law and how it could change depending on the product weigh in on when you decide whether to approve or deny a license?
Well, the city does not approve a tobacco license. That's reserved exclusively for the state. It comes out of our licensing division, but that's an administrative approval. Okay. There is no limit on the number of tobacco retail licenses in the city, and we can't not approve a license that is applied for. For CBD or for THC, up until recently, those were unregulated products. So I wrote and we unanimously passed a THC 21 rule in the city of Milwaukee, which prohibits tobacco or THC sales to anyone under the age of 20 or under the age of 21. That's the first regulation statewide. The state legislature hasn't considered THC for 7 years either. So there's a lot that the state legislature needs to do that would help Milwaukee. There are some things we can do on our own. We can regulate THC because state law does not address it, or THC asterisk the deltas, the delta 8, delta 10. Because state law doesn't address it, the city can step in and regulate that.
I hope you get this figured out. I hope what you wish for happens. I mean, 95% of smokers start before the age of 21. This is a scourge on our youth. I hope you get this done because it's science-backed. There's no doubt about that. We want to ask you about a couple other things while we have you here, Alderman. FEMA denies flood damage assistance for Milwaukee for infrastructure and for other things that are desperately needed because of the rains that took place late this summer. Why? Do you get a reason why, or do you just get a stamp that, no, you're denied?
All I saw was the release that announced that decision. I don't think that decision's final. There's certainly room for appeal and for additional outreach to the feds. And I know the governor's office is taking a lead on that, but I think that's something that across Wisconsin, every municipality in southeastern Wisconsin was affected by that to some degree, some more than others, certainly. But we have a $20+ million ask just for infrastructure and costs from the city of Milwaukee. That's a big, big impact to our budget.
Yeah, that's a real number.
Does it bother you and your fellows at City Hall that you have to be so reactive to something like this rather than proactive?
I am impressed at how DPW was able to manage that. The flood debris collection, getting streets reopened, getting cars towed out of the public right-of-way and out of public streets the very next morning. There was very, very little delay and very little impact. Frankly, I'm surprised from the amount of flooding that I saw in my part of town that the impacts and the devastation wasn't greater.
Peter, let's move on. Let's move on to the latest with the Milwaukee Fire Department and their equipment situation. Because of the committees that you're involved in and that you lead on, you're really taking a lead role in this. You just handed me something which is fascinating, and this is the age of the frontline engines and frontline ladder trucks in operation in our city. There is a frontline ladder truck, not a reserve. This is a regular truck in service that's 21 years old. There are 8 or 10 frontline engines that are 14, 15, 16, 17 years old. The fire chief is sounding the alarm, saying that this is inadequate and it's becoming a safety issue. How bad, how dire is the situation with our frontline firefighting equipment?
What we just saw today, this afternoon, where a ladder truck was responding to an emergency call, passing by the courthouse, lost a tie rod or a wheel or an axle.
Yep.
And got stuck on 10th Street right in front of the courthouse. That is only going to happen more often as our fleet gets older and older. We have a very talented crew that maintains fire equipment in the city. They do their job very well, but it's gotten to the point now where things are just so old. There are only so many Band-Aids you have in your toolbox. The chief asked for $30 million worth of equipment in the budget this year, and it's steadily increased over the last couple of years. And the mayor's proposed budget gave $2 million for fire equipment.
It's a big gap.
It's a huge gap. The reality of that gap is dozens of pieces of fire equipment that's past its recommended age. You can say, well, 15 years, you know, we're only a year or two beyond that. But 15 years is the maximum nationwide standard. Our fire trucks in Milwaukee deal with salted roads and potholes. And as a major metropolitan, they have multiple calls for service every single day. These trucks get beat up. They get maintained as far as we can. Right now, we are minus one for ladder trucks in the city. We have a station right downtown, 7th and Wells, that does not have a ladder truck. They're going to reallocate resources, maybe borrow one from a suburban municipality, but we have to be able to invest in equipment. The consequences of not doing that are only going to get worse and worse. Now, we have budget amendments on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I have to convince a total of three people on the Finance Committee to support whatever budget amendment we put forward. $14.8 million or $12.8 million more is a huge ask for the budget that already started $100 million in the hole. What's going to happen? We'll see where my colleagues are, but I'm having as many conversations as I can. Because I need three votes on the Finance Committee. I need eight votes on council. And if the mayor vetoes something, we need 10 votes on the council. That's a big ask.
Are you talking to the mayor's office also?
Absolutely.
This is, I mean, the money's got to come from somewhere. This is why it's so difficult, because this is critically important. We can all agree on that. But money that goes to this is money that's not going to somewhere else. How do you balance that?
That's what the whole budget process is about for every priority that we have in the city. Now, $2 million buys one fire engine, not even a fire truck. A fire truck costs $2.3 million. We have 43 pieces of frontline equipment in the city right now, which means on a 15-year lifespan, we should be replacing no less than three each year to keep our eyeballs above water. We're not. We haven't been doing that for a very long time, and the consequences are coming.
And is it safe to say that since this deals with emergency response vehicles, that it probably goes up higher on that priority hierarchy than other matters?
There are a lot of priorities in the city. Don't get me wrong. When I talk to my residents, when I was running for office, and when I talk to them now, public safety has always been the top priority. Basic city services are a must. It's not a want to. I would love to have shiny new fire trucks. No. We need fire trucks that don't break down when they're responding to emergencies. We need fire trucks that a firefighter feels confident getting on top of a 100-foot ladder to in a high rise, right? Right now, we just had annual inspections for ladder trucks. Three of our trucks failed. They'll be repaired if they can, right? And we'll get them back in service. But three of those trucks are out of service because they failed their annual UL inspection.
He is Milwaukee Alderman Peter Burgelis. Great information. Alderman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.